Oxish number 16757, reel 2.
Norman Pickles, reel 2. Where and when do you think this convoy was that you had the atrocious weather in?
I can only estimate it would probably be September or October 1941, because we'd been doing these convoys regularly back to April, and it was just one of those convoys that...
In the North Atlantic?
It was in the North Atlantic, yes. We were still on this routine of going halfway across, taking a convoy in 16 degrees west, and then bringing another convoy in. And on this occasion, we were going outward when we were outward bound when we had this bad weather. And it was before we went into Belfast for a refit on the 8th of October.
What do you remember then?
Well, after the refit, when we got this additional crew on board, and there's a few additional armaments, we went back to escorting, and in December 41 we just went out once with an outward bound convoy and brought one back in. The convoy numbers is, in that particular case, ON39, which was outward north, number 39, and the return convoy was HX161, that was from Halifax, number 161. And after that one, we then went up to Loch Ewe and started what were called the UR convoys. UR was UK to Reykjavik, RU was Reykjavik to UK. And we did a series of those after that. After December 41, we were doing these up to Reykjavik, maybe 7 days in Reykjavik, 5 or 6 days in Reykjavik, and then come back to the UK, bring them back to the Loch Ewe or maybe into the Clyde. But we did that for most of December, end of December, January 42, right up to March 1942. Nothing particularly happened except we were running up and down from UK to Iceland, and in my recollection, nothing happened. No enemy action anyway. We'd plenty of our worst enemy was always the weather. We'd plenty of bad weather, but no action. And the last UR convoy that we went on was in April 1942. And at that point, they kept us in Iceland. We stayed in Iceland, in Reykjavik. Well, we used to anchor in a fjord called Valfjord, which is the other end of the side of Reykjavik Bay. And we stayed there until... One thing they used to have us doing was doing anti-submarine patrols from Valfjord across to Reykjavik and back again, and it used to be away for a week, just going slowly from one side of the bay to the other, doing an ASDIC patrol, and then we'd go back into Reykjavik or Valfjord after that period of time. But this was everything preparing for the first Russian convoy that went on. So we had a session in Valfjord in May 1942, where one or two VIP naval officers came on board and told us we were going to do a wonderful job, or how badly the Russians wanted all these supplies and so on. And they gave us a day firing at aircraft targets and firing the 4-inch gun and firing the other guns in practice. And then we left Iceland on the 21st of May to go to North Russia. And we went west about. We went west along the south coast of Iceland, up through the Denmark Strait, and up into past Jan Mayen Island, up into the Arctic, onto Bear Island. And we, at this point, there were four trawlers, escort trawlers, in the close escort. One of them had to return after 2 days. One of them had to return because she couldn't keep up with the speed. There was an old ex-French trawler called the Retriever. And we ran into fog at first off at North Iceland, and the ship streamed fog buoys. These were like wooden sleds towed at the behind the ship, but they had an upright on them so that they appeared to... They made a spout of water. So if you got behind one of these sleds, you could keep behind it and you knew you were the right distance and the right speed from the ship in front, and hope that the ship was going the right way, of course. We had this fog for a couple of days, I think. And then after the fog, we were still going north. We got into a little bit of floating ice. And on the... I think it was the... We left on the... We left on the 21st of May, and it would be about the 25th or 26th when, 23rd probably, we got this German Blumenvoss flying boat escorting us. And from then on, we had a German flying boat going around the convoy all the time, and occasionally he'd come in a bit close to have a look and somebody would fire a gun at him and he'd go out again. But it was there all the time. And on the 25th or the 26th, a ship was torpedoed. On the 25th or 26th, we had our first air raid. And just to cheer us up a bit, we were escorted at that time by three cruisers. So they came in and steamed right through the convoy to show we were there. And they were with us during the first air raid. And at that point, there were no ships sunk. But one called the Carlton, an American ship called the Carlton, was severely damaged and had to go back. So the third trawler, one of the northern boats, had to escort the Carlton back to Reykjavik. So that left St. Elston and the Lady Madeline, the only two trawlers with the convoy from then onwards. And the following day, when the cruisers left us, having shown their strength, they left us. And so the following day, the aircraft were... with very little air support, air cover, with none at all in air cover. They started bombing us in earnest then, and we lost... Well, over the next 3 days, we lost seven ships out of the 35 that were... 35 of us left, seven were lost, and one went back to Iceland. So we arrived in... We arrived in Murmansk with 27. But when the air raid started, we did our best we were on the starboard quarter of the convoy escort over the escorts, and we fired what we could at these aircraft, but the 4-inch gun wouldn't angle high enough to... It wasn't a high-angle gun. In fact, there were only two ships in the convoy with high-angle guns. One was the Martin, a new destroyer, and the other one was the Allenbank, the anti-aircraft ship. All the rest, like us, we were firing Oerlikon. Well, no, we weren't then. We hadn't got an Oerlikon. We were firing bullets up in the air, but they were just going into thin air. It sounded encouraging when you heard the banging going on outside the in the wireless office. But anyway, we picked up our first lot of survivors from one of the ships. Our survivors were mostly Americans, actually. And we were close to a Russian ship called the Stary Bolshevik, and she's gone down in Russian naval history as the Stary Bolshevik, but we were very close to her, and she was hit on the port bow. She was bombed, and there were two objects came flying through the air. We actually saw them go off the deck, up right up in the air, and drop in the sea, and there were two of her crew, and they'd been blown off with the force of the explosion. So we were able to go alongside them and pick them up. One had a bandage on his head; he'd been hit with some shrapnel earlier on. So we picked these two Russians up, and one could speak a little English, and it was rather funny because he said he and his pal, they had been fighting in the Crimea, and they decided to send them to sea for a rest. Anyway, we picked up another ship. Oh, there's one called the Empire Purcell, a British ship. We picked only about two or three survivors off the Empire Purcell. I've since been in communication with one of those survivors. He lives in Australia. And the next one was the American ship. There were two American ships. There was the Alamar and...
Don't worry about it. Just go from memory, please.
The Alamar was one of the ships, and I forget the name of the other. But what happened was that we had a lot of survivors on board from the Alamar, but we were getting 20 or 30 at a time of these American ships on board because we were close by, and if the ship wasn't on fire, they were able to get off the boat with relatively few casualties. And then there was the other one was being hit and bombed, and it was on fire. And the engineers had obviously vacated the engine room without stopping the engines, and she was still steaming on fire. And we were very close. I could add the porthole of the wireless cabin open to see what was going on. And I could feel the heat from this burning ship, you know, through the porthole. It was very close to us. And on this burning ship, there was a raft that had not been released. It was fastened forward and fastened aft, and it was floating in the water, and there was an American seaman yelling his head off to be rescued. And also along near to us was a boatload of American survivors who were rowing towards us to be rescued. But our CO got on the bridge and got his loud hailer on, and he said, "Pick that fella up off the raft before. We won't rescue you till you've rescued that other American," you see. They were a bit scared about that. But they did go over towards this burning ship, and when it got fairly close, the American jumped into the sea, and they was picked up and brought, and then we rescued the whole boatload of them. I don't remember just clearly the names of the ship, but when we got into Reykjavik, when we got into Murmansk, we had over 100 survivors on board, and the same with the Lady Madeleine and the Hyderabad, the corvette. I think it is recorded that there were 497 survivors picked up on that convoy by the little ships, rescued, you know. Anyway,
were any of them in really bad condition?
Some were dead, or died. We had We had a couple of funeral services on the deck in between the air raids. They couldn't stand in the water very long. They couldn't survive more than a few minutes, 5 or 10 minutes at the outside. Some were pulled on board and they were already dead, and there were one or two others that died when they got on board. So on two occasions, we had a burial service. We laid them out on the foredeck, and our coxswain sewed them up in sacking with a fire bar at the bottom of the sacking to make it sink, and then we just got a plank and put them on in turn, and our CO came down and read the funeral service. We stopped the engine just for a few minutes. We weren't happy about stopping the engine, and consigned their bodies to the sea, sort of thing, and we did that on two occasions. There wasn't anybody seriously ill or wounded. Fortunately, there wasn't, because we hadn't got a sick berth attendant on board, and all we had was a box of pills and potions, a few bandages and that sort of thing. But so, fortunately, we didn't have any seriously ill people on board. There were occasions where somebody was seriously ill, not on our boat, but on others, and they were able to usually call a destroyer or one of the other bigger escorts that had a doctor on board and either let him come on board or get the fellow transferred onto the other ship when the action was quiet. But we were kept at it. I think it was about 4 days where these aircraft were coming over persistently, and there was one slight rest period we got because we ran into the ice. We've been sort of edging north all the time to get away from Norway. We got into the ice, and that provided some sort of cover from the submarines, at least. And eventually we got outside at the head of the Kola Inlet, close to the head of the Kola Inlet, off Kildin Island, and the Scumwell then split. Some of the ships were going down to Archangel, and we were with the section that were going to Murmansk. And just as we were doing this splitting operation, there came several bombers over, and we had quite a few bombs dropped around us, but fortunately no ships were hit. So we were able to go into Murmansk, well, into the entrance of the Kola Inlet. And when we got to the entrance of the Kola Inlet, the escort ships, we lined up facing the merchant ships. Then we saw the merchant ships coming in, and gave them a few cheers. The Ocean Voice, the Commodore's ship, had a thumping great big hole in her bows. You could have driven a car through it. But she was still steaming all right. And the Starry Bolshevik had caught up too. She was steaming, and she was badly damaged. And since a few years ago, I went on a visit to North Russia, and the Starry Bolshevik is the hero of the war. All the school children know about the Starry Bolshevik. It's a little Russian steamer. So that we were all safely into the Murmansk and into that Kola Inlet. And they anchored in Vyanga Bay, and then they used to go up to Murmansk town to discharge just a few ships at a time, because they hadn't got a great deal of jetty facilities for discharging merchant ships in numbers. In any case, the Germans were coming over every hour or so, or even less. Petsamo was only about 40 miles from Murmansk, and the Germans had an airfield in Petsamo, which was Finnish territory at that time, and they used to just whip over the hills above the inlet. They dropped three or four bombs, then went back again, these little fighter bomber things. And so the docks, which were mainly, well, they were wooden jetties, they were nearly always on fire at one place or another. Anyway, the merchant ship used to go down there in twos and threes, discharge, then come back to Vianga Bay and anchor there until there was another convoy going the other way. We went to a little place at the head of the Kola Inlet called Poliano. This was a Russian submarine base. And it was not unpleasant in Poliano. It was in a deep cleft in the sea, in the coast, and relatively clear of the bombing. The only bombs dropped down the inlet and down in Murmansk. When we were in Poliano, we felt safe. Although I've since learned that the front line was only about a few miles over the horizon, the land fighting front line. Anyway, it wasn't so bad in Poliano. We got on well with the Russian sailors. They got on well with us. We got on well with them. And they used to lend us skates and sledges, so we could go sledging. This was in June 1942. We were there the whole of June, and there was still snow about. And we did a few runs from time to time up and down the inlet, taking VIPs down to Murmansk or Vianga, and collecting stores and taking them round to the ships and that sort of thing. Kept us going for the whole of June. And then we left. The convoy formed up again, and we left June. We left Kola, Murmansk, on the 26th of June.
Any more details you can give about being ashore in Russia?
We were free to go ashore. There were armed soldiers all over the place. There were no civilians that could be seen, but there were no shops. We went ashore in Murmansk, and there were no shops. The place was virtually bombed to bits because most of the houses were wood, made of wood anyway, and there were a few rather gaunt-looking brick-built buildings there. The Arctic Hotel, when we got there, was still there. It was a stone-built building, a brick stone, something like that, the Arctic Hotel, and they had a big black stuffed bear at the entrance to the hotel, I remember. But there were no shops. We couldn't buy anything. We did a bit of bartering with the Russian soldiers. They went for cigarettes, and we got various things like knives, camping knife type thing. And one of our lads went and found a shop, and he bought a gramophone record by barter, cigarettes or something, whatever he was bartering. Brought this gramophone record back to the ship, and we were going to listen to some Russian music, and when he put it on, it was all in spoken Russian. It was one of these propaganda speeches, because in Poliano and in Murmansk, they had these loudspeakers set up in all the suitable places, and it was, they were belting out what we were told was Russian propaganda all the time. And down in the docks, there were working parties of political prisoners, many of them women. They were sort of digging and doing digging work and keeping roads passable and that sort of thing. And they were, at least we were told, they were political prisoners. They had soldiers on guard. We couldn't approach them. We could wave to them and grin at them, that's all. But I went ashore twice in Murmansk because there wasn't a lot there to to do with your windage for it, just for a walk. Now, down in Poliano, a friendly atmosphere with the sailors there, and we used to go up into the Red Navy Club, and there was an occasional film on there, and we once went to a concert, like their equivalent of a Venenza concert at the Red Navy Club in Poliano. But it was just more or less we had to make our own fun, I suppose, and there was one period where we had, because there were two or three ships in alongside us, escorts and a couple of destroyers, a corvette, and so we had a sports day on the jetty, and this amused the Russians no end, because we had a football match and one or two running matches and things like that, and very rough ground, but it just enabled us to have a little bit of competition and see who was the best ship, you know. And unfortunately, one of the ships that was with us having this football match was the Niger, HMS Niger, N-I-G-E-R, and she was one that was sunk on the way back. On the way back, she was one of these that was sunk that I mentioned earlier. But she was up there playing football with them.
Did the Russians seem to be grateful for what the Navy was doing?
Well, we hadn't that much contact with them, apart from the language difficulty, of course. The Russian sailors, as I mentioned in Poliano, they were pleased to see us, and so were the soldiers, a few soldiers that we met on land. But I think the soldiers were mainly pleased to see us because we had cigarettes and could do a bit of bartering. But no, I don't honestly think they really knew what was going on. I don't think they knew really why we were up there and how the rest of the Russia was going on, in spite of all these propaganda things. They were just concerned with what was going on around themselves, that's all, as I get the impression.
So you were telling me about the return convoy.
Yes, we left Kola on the 26th of June. Right, 26th of June. This was convoy QP13. The PQ was going up and QP is coming down. We left on the 23rd of. Let me get it again. 26th of June, 42. This was still 24 hours daylight, of course, up there at that time. And we had very overcast, not really bad weather, but it was overcast, there was low cloud. The whole of the time we didn't get attacked by the Germans on the way back, neither by aircraft nor submarines. Mainly the aircraft were unable to get through because of the weather, probably. But we weren't attacked anyway. And we got off the north the east coast of Iceland, and there the convoy split in two. One half went down the west coast of Iceland towards UK, down to Loch Hugh, and the escorts would go into Sadie's Fjord. And we, the section that we were with, carried on across the north coast of Iceland